Hardly amazing that he subdued an opposing party. Still, when the Lord does so, imitating human behavior, sages glorify his acts. So now the purport by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The philosopher Aristotle once argued that the Supreme God would hardly take part in human activities, since in ordinary activities are unworthy of such divine being. I've heard this also from other people, that they have a similar mood about that, because not so fortunate. Similarly, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who almost certainly never had read the works of Aristotle, raises a similar point. Since Sri Krishna creates, maintains, and annihilates the entire universe, isn't it an uninteresting mismatch when he fights against Jarasandha? The answer is as follows. The Lord plays the part of a human being and expands his pleasure potency, creates thrilling, transcendental pastimes full of suspense and dynamic action. By the Lord's yoga maya potency, he appears exactly like a human being, and thus we may enjoy the spectacular spectacle of the Supreme Person carrying on the earthly stage, acting on the earthly stage. Undoubtedly, stubborn agnostics will argue that since Krishna is God, there's no real suspense involved. Such skeptics simply do not understand Krishna's attractive potency. Beauty and drama, even on the material stage, possess their own fascinating logic. And similarly, we love Krishna for his own sake. We appreciate his beauty for its own sake, and we enjoy Krishna's pastimes because they are in fact wonderful in and of themselves. In fact, Krishna executes his pastimes not for a mundane, egotistical purpose, but for our pleasure. Thus, the presentation of spiritual pastimes is itself an act of love that Krishna performs for the infinite spiritual happiness of pure-hearted souls who have transcended material envy of the Godhead. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes an important verse from the Gopal Tapanani Upanishad. Maybe we could say this all together. Narakrita param brahma krita manasu. The Supreme Absolute Truth, for his own purpose, appears in a human form, although he is the source of everything. Similarly, in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.32, we find yam amritam paramananda purusam brahman sat manam. The source of transcendental bliss, the eternal Supreme Brahman, has become their friend. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Janajana Salakaya Chaksum Militanyena Tadmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jaitam Saritopangur Mamamanda Matergati Matsarvatsapatam Bojo Radha Madhanamana Jaitam Sarito. So in this verse here, it's such a fascinating way that Krishna consciousness works. It's the science of consciousness. We have individual consciousness, and there's the supreme consciousness, Krishna, and there's a relationship. And in the material influence, that relationship is covered and we're bound up in the illusion, identifying with the body, mind, senses, being forced to act by the modes of nature, and we're just consciousness, the soul, but the, not just consciousness, but part and parcel of Krishna. It has certain nature that's never lost. We're always having the anandamoya vyasaka, we're always looking for happiness, there's certain things, but just the study of consciousness. So here, I thought of a verse in the Bhagavad Gita that would relate to what's taking place here also by the Srimad Bhagavatam's influence on how our consciousness gets affected. Where our consciousness is always being affected by the different environments we're in. In fact, our intelligence is to discriminate which things we should be affected by and which things we shouldn't. Just like during every once in a while when we're saying these prayers, I hear one or two of the words like uttama, you know, gatim, that we sing in this the Guru Puja prayer, uttamam gatim, that entering into this uttamam. So our consciousness is developing the ability to tell more about what is going on and all the different levels. They give us information that we can work with, like there's a sensual plane of existence, a mental plane of existence, intellectual plane of existence, transcendental, spiritual planes of existence. And ultimately, by knowledge, we're able to distinguish one from another, and by use of our intelligence, come to the transcendental plane of existence, spiritual plane of existence. This is our desire, and we understand that this prema pumorta mahan, that this is the goal of life, is to have access to that by the purification of our heart. And of course, I'd like to just thank so many devotees that come to this class to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. Is not an ordinary event. Hearing this is what was it? It's Nitya Sukriti. That this is our eternal benefit we get every time we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with the devotees, following under the instructions of the spiritual master. This is permanently altering our existence, beginning of all auspiciousness. There's so many wonderful things. So in the Bhagavad Gita, I thought of two verses that this relates to, this verse today. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving this body, take birth again in this material world, but obtains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. So, can you see a connection how this verse here, when it's talking about that it's not a wonderful thing that Krishna can kill a demon, that in fact, most of the time, he delegates that. They're killing each other all the time, and there's the material nature with hurricane, all the adiatmic, adibodhic, adidaivics are doing that, but how Krishna does that, it was brought out in the purport, he does that for his devotees. So, what is the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance? It's for the pleasure of his devotees, ultimately. He does this for his own pleasure. So we're understanding that. And then I went back to 246. Anybody know numbers? I'm a number person. 246 is... Hey, Tegers. All right. All the purposes served by the small well can at once be served by the great reservoirs of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. So what is the purpose behind all the Vedas? Is to know Krishna. It's a 15:15. By all the Vedas I am to be known. And we understand, how do you know Krishna? You only know Krishna by bhakti mama bhajanti. It's only by devotion that one can understand. So, acharya van purusho veda, if one has an acharya, then he can know things as they are. For instance, I ran across this verse about Jarasandha, and I thought this would be interesting to share. It mentions, this is in Adi Lila chapter 8, verse 9. One who does not accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a demon. I got it this time. I shortened this, so thank you. Okay, so I'll read that again. One who does not accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God is certainly a demon. Similarly, anyone who does not accept Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Krishna, as the Supreme Lord, is also a demon. And then in the purport, who does Prabhupada use for an example of this? Jarasandha. He says, formerly there were kings like Jarasandha who strictly followed the Vedic rituals, acted as a charitable, competent kshatriya, possessed all kshatriya qualities, and even was obedient to Brahminical culture, but who did not accept Krishna as the Supreme Person of Godhead. So it's saying that, I thought it was this verse, maybe it's another one, but, it was the verse before, text 8. Formerly, kings like Jarasandha, the father-in-law of Kamsa, strictly followed the Vedic rituals, thus worshipping Lord Vishnu. So just see, he worshipped Lord Vishnu, he followed the Vedic culture, he just had this one little problem. So, it's just interesting because, you know, we think of how are we to understand him? So it says he was a demon because he didn't accept that. So ultimately, we can see Krishna was so kind, he included him as part of his lila, but we understand that it's anukulena. It's supposed to be favorable, this type of service. Of course, he did service because he brought all the demons to his door. So it was a very efficient way of getting rid of all the demons. So in this, I got two more references that I was going to mention. One is that this reminded me a lot of this particular point that we're focusing on as a Christian, as a human. Why does he do that? You know, what are these understanding and nature of his appearance? So I thought of prayers by Queen Kunti. You know which one? Anybody know which one I'm thinking of? 1829. Do I got a first word? Naveda. That's the one. That's great, you know. You just give them a word and they take off. All right. Oh Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes, which appear to be human and so are misleading. You have no specific object of favor, nor do you have any object of envy. People only imagine that you are partial. So here, Queen Kunti, she has a particular ability that she can see and understand, here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Yogamaya works with her in a different way for her part in the pastimes. And she's seeing this, you know, fear personified is afraid of you, but you're running from Mother Yasoda's. So we're starting to understand the Krishna, because the general conception of God without getting the mercy coming through the disciplic succession, without specifically the influence of Radharani, which is so strong in our particular line, one really can't understand anything. If you think about it, what can you understand about Krishna without Radharani? I mean, what it doesn't, nothing makes any sense without her mercy. So were so kind to have that so presented so nicely in all of the commentaries. So in this verse here, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he points out that the same line of thinking. He says, if Krishna is the Lord of the universe, how can he derive any pleasure in fighting with the most insignificant jiva, who is no equal to him? If Krishna experiences no taste for this, then what is the use of describing it? This verse answers the question. Okay, because someone would say, that's not a very fair match. How can, you know, Krishna, he's got universes coming out of his, and from an expansion, 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 coming out of his pores, he's fighting with a jiva? You know, well, that's not very fair. So it says, what is so astonishing about Krishna's fighting? For Krishna, who appears in a human body and performs activities like a human, it is suitable, because he's playing the part of a human. Krishna assumes a human form and behaves accordingly. For Krishna to defeat Jarasandha in that form in which he creates the universe would not be very relishable. You know, that would, like one time Prabhupada was saying, Krishna, he's so kind that he accepts the form of the deity. He's as the deity says, if he says, would you like to try to dress the universal form? He says, immediately, all of your textile industries are finished. You know, where will you find the cloth? You know, so Krishna, he's always accommodating his devotee. That's and we're learning. This is what we're understanding as our consciousness is actually evolving by hearing every day this the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're being able to tell what the modes of nature are. We can be able to tell that. And we can tell what is the mind. And we can tell what is the intelligence. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's meant to be relished. So relished, what is it relished with? Who's the one that's relishing? Just like, for instance, if you've taken any time, we're given as initiates to this Gayatri mantra. And most of them have like three different parts. Try to understand, meditate, and how is that enthusing you? Where is that potency coming that's enthusing you? So if we think, how are we, what is it that we're knowing? Now think about that. Now get absorbed in that. And then notice where it is. It's not part of the modes of nature, this whole concept. And this is an expansion that's meant to be three times a day. Practically, there isn't anything else besides chanting Hare Krishna that we do so much. 70 lines a day, is it? And 10 times. I'm going to read some more. All right. Nor should one argue that Krishna's human form is not his original form, his svarupa, because the scriptures say, nara krita param brahma karana manusa. I was the same one from the other verse. Now the scriptures, the Supreme Absolute Truth, Param Brahma, for his own purposes, appears in his human form, although he is the source of everything. Similarly, in the Bhagavatam, these are probably the same ones that are quoted, the eternal Supreme Brahman, the source of transcendental bliss, has become their friend. So, here we're understanding this idea of how Krishna, our consciousness is developing, that we can see why Krishna does everything. And in this particular verse, he's changing from, because we were just at the gopis and Uddhava, and then stay place by place by place. Now we're right at the end of, he didn't kill Jarasandha. He's just engaging him so nicely, and he's building his fort in Dwarka, in the water there, to protect his devotees, which is also another point in the Bhagavatam. There's 10 subjects, and one of the 10 subjects, 10%, is the protection of his devotees. So in this world, as one becomes situated more in understanding that I'm trying to become a devotee, I don't know when that will ever happen, but you get credit for trying in Krishna consciousness, and that we're under his protection, isn't it? That there's a verse that what's the one, under my devotees are under my protection? Yeah, I think that's it. So the devotees were always actually under Krishna's protection, and then just, oh, that would be good. Yeah, that's it. Just like here it's talking about an ocean that, how did they explain it? It was an unfathomable ocean of soldiers that were there to try to devastate the Krishna and Balaram, plus all the residents they were going after, Krishna's family. And we're also part of Krishna's family. We just have to remember that was previous one, if anybody remembers that idea that I presented. Like there's unions and reunions, and we're all members of Krishna's family, so we're already a member, we just have to remember. And then you can get your membership where you can cross the ocean of material existence. So, okay, we all, maybe we don't remember. I'm not sure if I should use that again. It was only about 2 months ago. Anyway, it's funny. That so we're on this ship crossing over the ocean of material existence. And it looks as scary as that ocean of that was in front of Krishna and Balaram. But here it says it's play. So for a devotee, even though there's so many difficulties, the difficulties are actually required. Otherwise, we wouldn't have them. It's part. And in fact, there's a nice argument between the gopis and Krishna about why Krishna does things like that. Like Krishna and the gopis, they were having a discussion, and the gopis were saying that separation is so painful. And Krishna says, well, it's part of intensifying your affection for me. And he says, this is the way that you do it. It's so painful. This is, you can't figure out anything else to do but to put us in such distress by your separation. And he says, no, this is actually, it's good. And they were having one of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur commentary conversations, the way he does that. So actually, everything that takes place in our life, the difficulties, is to increase the threshold of our intensity, the eagerness of our intensity to be with Krishna. Because the problem is only generally created in our own mind. And I know last time I mentioned that devotees who can control their mind, that Mother Lakshmi Moni said that she didn't agree with that point, because in the Bhagavad Gita it says that when Krishna says you can control the mind with practice and determination and by the correct means. And the point that I was trying to make was it's by Krishna's grace that the mind gets controlled. So it's not that it's just dependent on your own endeavor. With everything in this relationship, learning how the individual consciousness is relating to the supreme consciousness, who's all-pervading, who's is the mind, is the intelligence, is the gross body, is the subtle. But Krishna, in one aspect, it's all his energy. So the energy and the energetic are not different. And so you can't artificially control the mind. That's what I was trying to say. It's actually done as a byproduct of your sincerity in Krishna consciousness. The correct means is to revive your relationship with Krishna. And in the different places it mentions, like if you go to a junkyard in the evening, they have a fence with a lot of dogs running around in them. It's generally the way it's described. And they're very serious looking animals. If you approach the fence, they'll deter you with their aggressive barking. And so the material energy, it acts similarly to that. It's very scary, even though sometimes it makes you think you'll be happy. It's a trick. But to try to stop that dog on your own would be very difficult. However, as soon as the boss comes out and he says, "Oh, hey, Bill, haven't seen you," and then he calls the dogs off and they just go and lay down. They're fine because they're under the control. So Maya, to try to control the mind, to keep it away from Maya, is a very difficult thing. Her power is much greater than our power. But by the determination, by following the correct means of surrendering to Krishna, then Krishna calls off the agitation of the mind. And the second verse of the Bhagavatam, it mentions the word nirmatsara, nirmatsaranam satam, and it says the threefold miseries stop. That's nice. So one of the threefold miseries is the adhyatmic, which is generally the mind. So when one becomes pure in his heart, other than that, it's just there to assist us, to show us our illusory attachments. And then those attachments, the hard part is to look inside the heart and see why we're attached to something that intrinsically is very bad. It can actually, it's toxic, it kills you. This fruit of activities, we put a nice label on what that type of thinking is. It's called a fruit of activity, and it's generated from the false ego, which generated all the rest of the creation. And one has to be introspective on those points. And from there, I know one time I was talking to this one young devotee, and they were in distress. Imagine that. So I asked if the distress was that their material desire was unfulfilled, and that's what was causing their distress, or was it the distress caused because they had a material desire? It's a thought-provoking question. It kind of puts all material desires into one group, and you deal with them in a wholesale fashion. You can never actually deal with them one-on-one. They're coming too often. But you can deal with them as a group. I think they call it shotgun method. You can group them all together and deal with it wholesale. The verse on that is the 429.69 verse explains how to do that. So the same way, when we have a material desire, you may try to deal with that individual material desire, but you know what happens is you'll get entangled in it. That's the trick. You can't exactly deal with each material desire. You have to deal with them wholesale as a material desire, and that we're a spirit soul, and we're not, at our stage, they're not good to have. So we have to take away all the designations, take away all the instruments of the illusion, and that'll unravel the ropes. What's another name for rope in Sanskrit? Guna, yeah. All right, that's good enough. I'll take any questions or comments, and then because we got one back there, Mother McCoy. We have a runner for the microphone. There we go. In case she's getting old. Thank you for being attentive. I hope I said something that was useful.
Krishna. You said, so we can deal with these material desires wholesale. But you cited verses, and you didn't recite the verses.
Oh, all right.
Did you?
Krishna consciousness means seeing the cosmic manifestation with the same mentality that Krishna does. This is not always possible, Imagine that. Not always. Oh, are you going to put it up? Oh, it's up. Oh, now you can. Why don't you read into the microphone? Because I was paraphrasing it according to my dimension.
Where is this from?
This is 4 Canto, chapter 20, 69.
Oh.
29, 69. Yes. Thank you.
What chapter is that? What is it titled? 4th Canto.
You'll have to pull it down a little bit.
I just wondered what last time.
I can find it in a moment. What's it called?
Talks between Narada and King Prachinibarhi.
Okay. Yeah, do you want to read that?
Means constantly associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in such a mental state that the devotee can observe the cosmic manifestation exactly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead does. Such observation is not always possible, but it becomes manifest exactly like the dark planet known as Rahu, which is observed in the presence of the full moon.
Pretty tricky, huh? So you have to read at least the first couple lines of the purport. there's 64 arts. One of them is speaking in kind of riddles, you know. So verses that are hard to understand, I think they may have had that one in mind. Go ahead.
Purport. It has been explained in the previous that all desires on the mental platform become visible one after another. Sometimes, however, by the supreme will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the whole stockpile can be visible all at one time. In Brahma Samhita, it is said, "Nirdhahati kintucha bhakti bhajam." When a person is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, his stockpile of material desires is minimized. Indeed, the desires no longer fructify in the form of gross bodies. Instead, the stockpile of desires becomes visible on the mental platform by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this connection, the darkness occurring before the full moon, the lunar eclipse, can be explained as being another planet known as Rahu. According to Vedic astronomy, the Rahu planet, which is not visible, is accepted. Sometimes the Rahu planet is visible in the presence of full moonlight. It then appears that this Rahu planet exists somewhere near the orbit of the moon. The failure of modern moon excursionists may be due to the Rahu planet. In other words, those who are supposed to be going to the moon may actually be going to this invisible planet Rahu. Actually, they are not going to the moon, but to the planet Rahu. And after reaching this planet, they come back. Apart from this discussion, the point is that a living entity has immense and unlimited desires for material enjoyment, and he has to transmigrate from one gross body to another until that these desires are exhausted. No living entity is free from the cycle of birth and death unless he takes to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, in this verse, it is clearly stated, Satvaika Niste, that when one is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, in one stroke he is freed of past and future mental desires. Then, by the grace of the Supreme Lord, everything becomes simultaneously manifest within the mind. In this regard, Vishnuvas Chakravarti Thakur cites the example of Mother Yashoda seeing the whole cosmic manifestation within the mouth of Lord Krishna. By the grace of Lord Krishna, Mother Yashoda saw all the universes and planets within the mouth of Krishna. Similarly, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, a Krishna-conscious person can see all his dormant desires at one time and finish all his future transmigrations. This facility is especially given to the devotee to make his path clear for returning home back to Godhead.
What do you think? Did that cover it? Yes, so basically, you can, one of the things that I got from it, I used the word silhouette. You know, like sometimes you put up, they make caricatures in front of a light because there's a shadow. So how do you see darkness? You can't see darkness. If you put a light in it, it goes away. So how do you see the mind and material desires is they become silhouetted against the light of Krishna consciousness. You can't see them in the darkness, the reflection that appears in darkness, 2934. So when one is desiring strongly in Krishna consciousness, something that's not Krishna conscious sticks out. And then when you, even in the beginning, there's, it kind of like it butts in, you know, how the mind works. It seems to me there's two types. There's the deliberate mind. You want to think about something, and you're thinking about it, but then all of a sudden there's the interrupting, or Jack Rabbit, or the Budinsky. The mind just all of a sudden, it pops up with something else a million miles away, and it sweeps you away. How'd I get here? I was just in the middle of doing this, and now I'm thinking about that. So it seems like there's two aspects, you know, that go on in the mind. There's the one where you're controlling it and thinking about something, and there's the other one that just, where does it come from? Well, does anybody else have that experience? So, gradually, it's as you bring it back that you use that as an opportunity to, actually you can make a nice prayer. We have a nice enough information. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevam, Archanam, Vandanam, Devandanam. You can make prayers at that time to say, Krishna, I know at one time this was very attractive to me. However, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and this knowledge, I understand that it's not good for me. It's not pleasing to the pure devotees. You know, it's a place of pilgrimage for crows. And you know, you improvise with your particular mood, but to me that's the only thing that works for that, is a type of prayer, because otherwise if you pay attention to it, all of a sudden you zoomed into it and everything else disappears. It's a kind of a scary, the jiva is so small, and we're training our consciousness of what consciousnesses we want to be conscious of, and which ones we don't. And he's given us all the secrets. He says, if you think about something, even for just a little while, you'll want it. You want to have it. You want to possess it. You want to control it. You want to enjoy it. And then you're going to become frustrated and angry and bewildered. So we've understood the mechanisms of the subtle existence that's going on in our mind, and how just a different thought brings a different future. Just having a different thought, you can end up in hell and you can end up in the spiritual world just by changing how you think. And now we're reflecting on that to say which thoughts are accepted and which ones aren't accepted. And then we just pray that I have enough sincerity that at some point in time it'll start working good enough for me that I'll get some relief. Because Maya is the salesman, and she has to keep checking until she's sure you don't want her product. So if you say, well, I don't want the orange one. He says, well, I have it in blue. He said, well, I don't know, maybe not blue. Okay, well, I'll have it in another color. As long as she thinks she's got a customer, they have it as overcoming objections. And she just, you know, and it's unlimited, and she's very good at it. So, and I break it down to Krishna saying to us, would you like me or something else? So then I say, what else do you have? And he says, well, really, I don't have anything else besides me, Vasudeva Sarmiti, but for you, I can create something. And it's endlessly mutable. However, whatever you want, you can try to enjoy that. And then take a spin through samsara for millions and millions of births, and you say, I don't think I want any of that anymore. Is the offer still on the table? It's always on the table. So now what do you want? I only want you. And when Maya is convinced, or Krishna is convinced, that that's a fact, because we got a new one that there's no payment till next year, next birth. You know, enjoy now, pay in your next body. You have good credit, you know, so that you can just follow how advertising works, just like Maya, you know. Just think about this for a while. Put a billboard in front of you. So you see it every day, and after seeing it every day for a month, and you finally say, okay, I'm going to buy it. You know, but then, sucker, you know, there's a new model that just came out. You bought last year's model. Oh, well. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Jai Hare Krishna.